Accession number 31510, reel 9.
I was on leave. And when I returned to leave, from leave to Laddham, the squadron had gone. They'd gone to Dyce, near Aberdeen. So I said to the officer who was still there, I don't know his name, I don't know what he was. The war had just been over, because it was announced on my way back to the squadron. Did I tell you about the chap running by on the station? No? On the way back from leave to Laddham, when the war was ended, I didn't know the war had ended, but while I was waiting on the platform at Victoria for a train to, I think, Wroxham, somewhere like that, a soldier ran by and he shouted out, "The war's over." So I went on back to Laddham and I thought, well, the war's over now, I'll apply for leave. So I said, "Can I go on leave now? War's over." He said, "Yeah." Gave me a leave pass. I went home again. So I got back to Waterloo Station, and the lights of London were on for the first time, and I had an hour or so to wait for a train. So I had a walk round outside Waterloo Station, and the lights were on, and I turned a corner, and there was a wrought iron fence and a short space, and then the windows of the houses. And as I went round the corner, just along there, there was a soldier, and he was leaning on the fence, looking into the window. When I came up to him, I looked into the window, and a young lady was just getting into bed, all her clothes on the floor, and he turned and he said, "All right," and it, just like that. Yeah, I can see him now, leaning on there, as happy as a lordy boss.
She hadn't noticed.
Either she hadn't noticed or she didn't care. Yeah, it was nice to have the lights on, wasn't it? Not be blacked out. Yes, so I came home. And then when I went back, I had to go back to Drem. And nothing happened up there much. No, nothing. Nothing. I used to go around the granite pits. I had a 2.2 rifle with me at the time. Used to go and shoot a rabbit, perhaps, or something like that. And I was demobbed from there.
What happened during the demobilisation process?
You were just told that you were demobbed. You were to go to, I had to go to, come down to London and go to Wembley. And there was, it's like a great clothing store. And you went through one door, walked through, and they'd fit you out with a suit, hat, whatever, civilian clothes. And that was it. Yeah, and you were away. Home.
Yeah.
Cool.
How did you feel to be?
Lovely. Lovely. Yeah, it felt fine. Yeah. 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 Lucky too. Yeah, very lucky. Yeah. Nothing like going home. No. Where, at the end of the war, I used to try to get as many weekend leave as I could, because I hadn't had any, you see. And one time I got as far as Waterloo, It was just before D-Day. The old leave was stopped, and my wife wasn't well. So I applied for a quick leave, you see. And I got 36 hours. So I came from, we were at to West Malling then, near Maidstone. So I got away from there and got to London. And from London I couldn't get a train to Salisbury. So I got a train that was going to Bournemouth. And I thought I'd get out at Brockenhurst and walk to Verwood, where my wife was living. Anyway, I got out at Brockenhurst and I thought, I'm bound to see an American jeep or something going across the forest. I didn't see a soul. No, I walked all the way. Well, it's a lie. I did see a soul. I came through Burley. You know Burley? You don't know. No, it's a large village in the middle of the forest. Court was a hell of a way to Brockenhurst to Burwood. Must have been 20 miles, I suppose. Anyway, got to Burley, and as I came into Burley, I saw a little light flickering in the woods, and I went through the trees to see what it was, and it was a tank. The crew was asleep on the ground, and the little light was there, what they'd had to cook their evening meal, still flickering. I didn't disturb them. I went on. And I didn't know how to put one foot in front of the other by the time I got the Verwood. No. I got out of the train at 11 o'clock at night, I know. And it was the early hours of the morning when I got into Verwood. Cool, was a walk. I walked and ran and walked and ran, you know. Of course, I was fit and young in those days. Yeah. Anyway, I had to get up in the morning to catch the train to get back again. But it was worth it. Yeah, everything was all right. Yeah. Surprising what you can do when you got to. You know. Someone said, walk to Brockenhurst now. To any young man, they say, why? I said, I do that. I got a car or I got a motorbike. See? Oh. So later on, at the end of the war, I took back my wife's bike. Nice little bike too, it was. And I used to bring that on the train, get out at Brockenhurst and cycle forward. They wouldn't do it today. Oh, I can't say we're that far. Oh, it was very good. Yeah. But I wouldn't have missed it.
No. How did you find the general atmosphere in Britain during the years just following the war?
I think a bit disappointing. Yes, the war was over. I went to... I had started teacher training before the war was over. Before the war was over, they realised that when the war was over, people would have to have jobs. So they started training schemes. And I wanted, well, my wife was a teacher, so I thought, well, why not? I'd been moved about so much in the service, I thought I'm not going to stay in any longer. I wish I had sometimes. But never mind. I used to correspond with a tutor who was a lady tutor. Old lady, doctor, can't remember her name now, who was a tutor in Salisbury Training College, Teachers Training College, and I used to correspond with her. She used to send me tasks to do, wherever I was, even when I was in France. And I used to send back my ideas and things like that. It was good training. And when we were at Drem, no, Dice, one of the things I had to do was visit an HMI, Her Majesty's Inspector of Schools, which I did. I went to the education offices and asked if I could visit an HMI, could you give me his address? Oh yes, so I went there, and he invited me to tea. I went to tea and had a chat about his job, and his wife was interested in dramatics, and they were producing a play about the Talpal Martyrs. You know about the Talpal Martyrs? Yes? They were a group of farmers who rebelled against the farming laws at Talpal in Dorset, and they were sent to Australia as a penal settlement. Yeah. Well, they were doing a play about the Talpal Martyrs, and I had a book about the Talpal Martyrs, with all the photographs of the Talpal Martyrs and everything in it, all the letters and documents and trials, and I let her borrow it, you see. And it was all very pleasant. And so I found out what the HMI really does. He goes to one school and picks up ideas there and takes it on to the next school and pretends that he invented it, you see. That's what he told me anyway. So it was very pleasant. And then when the war actually ended, I applied for proper teacher training. It was a one-year scheme in those days because they were short of teachers. It was called the Emergency Training Scheme. And I suppose because I'd already started this, they gave me an interview, which didn't go very well, I'm afraid. He said, why didn't you take up teaching before? I said, well, I was in the Air Force, wasn't I? You see, I said, anyway, I couldn't afford it. Oh, all right. Anyway, they let me through. And I went to Cheltenham College on a grant from the government. For me, my wife, and one child, we had one child then, £300 for a year. We thought that was pretty good, £6 a week. £300 is nothing, no? Nothing at all. No, so I spent a year in Cheltenham, and I suppose I did fairly well. Came out and got a job at Sixpenny Handy, which is the village into Dorset further. I stayed there for a term because a post came up in Fordingbridge. So I applied for that because it was nearer home. Sixpenny Handy is quite a way away. I used to ride a motorbike over there when I didn't cycle. I used to cycle most times, but I did have a motorbike. And I used to pick up, won't believe this either, Cranbourne is about 4 or 5 miles away. From Cranbourne to Sixpenny Handley is quite a long way over the downs. I used to ride the motorbike. I used to see a chap walking along. And I stopped and said, would you like a lift? Where are you going? Going to Sixpenny Handy, and he was a shepherd, and he walked from Cranbourne to Sixpenny Handy every day to look after his sheep and then walk home again. God, marvellous man. Anyway, I applied for the job in Fordingbridge, went in there, and I got the job. I remember the vicar was on the panel. It was a church school. And he said, oh, how do you feel about teaching religion, Mr. Stevens? I said, boss, sir, it's your job, not mine. I said, I could build a house. I said, but a builder would do it better than me. And I said, you'll teach religion better than I would. Oh, well, that's fine. Because they were about to... It was about the time when vicars were going to be banned from school. So I thought... I suppose he thought, well, I'm on your side. I got the job. And I stayed there, what, 26 years, I suppose. Yeah. All very nice.
Did you take part in the 1945 elections?
Yes. And we all voted Labour. Why? Because of propaganda. The Russians had started it, the Labour propaganda started when I was in Egypt. When the Fleet Club used to close down at night, they used to sing, "We keep the red flag flying here." That was a Russian do, wasn't it? Yeah. That's why. I think we were all brainwashed. That's why I say, you asked me what we felt like after the war. Disappointed. Yeah, very disappointed, because there were so many petty restrictions. Now, as I say, there was nothing here in those days. Nothing at all. And I wanted some chicken wire. Used to get 50-yard rolls. Quite cheap to put up a run to keep chickens in. No, you can't. No, it's short supply. You can't do that. So I applied again, but this time for wire to keep poultry from growing crops. Oh, yes, you can have that. Because it's keeping the chickens off the crops, you see. Yeah, that was all right. And there was no electricity when we first came here. There was no water. There was a well, which is under the kitchen now, and a pump inside with a long iron handle. The cooking was done on a paraffin stove, and there was a copper in the old house for boiling the clothes with a fire underneath. No electricity. I'm paid for the water to be laid all the way round the lane. I paid, and a bloke who lives up the lane over there, and the lady who owned the land, that she lived in an old house up that end. We paid between us to have the water laid. I phoned the telephone company. Will you put the electricity in? No, electricity company. Can't do that, can't get the poles. The electricity was that way over the fields there. So I said, if I get the poles, will you come and put it in? Oh, yes. So I went to see the woodsman, and I said, I want to buy two big fir trees, please. He said, all right, it cost you 1 and 6 months. And they grew across the road, the other side over there. They're still there. So we went up there and we cut down two good fir trees. Nice and straight they were. And when they're standing up, it looks all right. But well, there's dozens of others standing up all round, aren't there? But if you lay one down, you can't get him out. You can't turn him. You've got a tree in the way. Oh, we had a job. Anyway, eventually we got the two tree trunks up here. We had a little trolley, wheeled them up. It was a cart track in those days, grass growing all the way up. Got them up here, and I phoned the electricity company. I said, you can come and put the electricity in, I've got the poles. All right, I said. So they turned up with two brand new telephone poles, put them in across the fields there, brought the wire in, and my two tree trunks were still out there on the ground. They brought their own poles. So that was a lot of old nonsense, wasn't it? Yeah. So that was that. We got electricity. And we had the water. That was after my second son was born. Because when he was born, I had to pump the water up and heat it on the stove things, you see. Yeah, then there was a range in the old house. the old Black Rain, you know. So there we are. We had electricity.
Did you find anything in the way of sort of an ongoing mental or psychological effect from the war?
I do now. No, I think the tears you should have shed are saved. And when you're old, I see that, you know, I see that those poor starving children upsets me.
Here.
See, nobody does anything about it. That's what annoys me. You see these thousands of poor little kids, and the politicians sit back on their backsides, don't they? Yeah. And they've huge wages and allowances for this, especially those in Europe. Nothing done for these kids. The United Nations is a dead loss, really, isn't it? I always thought that when the United Nations was started, that the United Nations would be able to call at a moment's notice on an army. And if there was any squabbling like there is in Iraq or anywhere like that, they'd put their army in there and say, stop it. But no, they don't do anything. Or we'll have a meeting next week to discuss it. And that's as far as it goes. It is really. No. I know the United Nations took part in Korea, didn't they? But I don't know whether they're involved in Iraq or Afghanistan. I don't know. No, I think the United Nations is a dead loss. Record it if you like, that's my opinion.
What was your attitude towards the Germans and the Italians during the war?
Well, they were the enemy, weren't they? They were the enemy. But I think the Germans were, perhaps I shouldn't say it, can't say cleaner, better than the Italians. I know the German rifle was much better than the Italian rifle. Yeah, the Italian rifle was too light. Too light. Nearly jumped out of your arms when you fired it. But the German rifle was very much like ours. Yeah. Yeah, I converted one into a sporting rifle once. Very nice it was too. But no. Oh, we didn't like them, of course. They didn't like us. Although when I came home on leave, when was it, 1940? Must have been 1943. I went indoors, and my parents lived opposite the village church up the road there, and there was a German in there. The German prisoners had been released to work on farms, hadn't they? And this one was working on a farm nearby, and my mother and stepfather had invited him in for a cup of tea, which was a nice thing to do. And I forget what his name was, Kurt, I think, Kurt something or other. And I was a bit surprised, you know. You come home on him, there's a bloody German in there. But he was all right, he was a nice fellow. I don't know what happened to him after the war. No, none at all. No. No, and there used to be a girl from this village who used to go to the pictures with a German prisoner of war who was working on a farm. And that didn't go down very well. No. No, things are different now, aren't they? Because the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq is no threat to us, is it? The other war was.
How then, looking back now, do you view the Second World War as a whole?
It was something which we had to do. Not that we wanted to do it. We had to do it. Yeah. I mean, I'm against the European Union. Like a lot of people are. I don't get about nowadays, but my brother gets around, and so does my next door neighbour there. And they say they all feel like we do. We want to rule ourselves. We don't want to be told by people in Brussels who've never been elected. Peter Mandelson, mind. He gets chucked out of our government for something or other, and he gets a job straight away in Europe. Foreign Secretary now for the European Union or something, isn't he? Well, see, they're not elected people, and I don't like being ruled by non-elected people. No. Then they issue too many regulations. I don't know whether it affects town people, but in the country, there's all kinds of regulations that upset things. See, you can't buy creosote now. Well, everybody used to use creosote on their sheds and things like that. One of my sons is able to buy creosote because he rears game birds, and he must have the creosote for their houses, you see. So if I want some, I get some from him. But I had a new oil tank fitted not very long ago. And one firm said, oh, no, you can't have an oil tank there, although there'd been one there for 40 years. You can't have one there because European regulations say it must be so far from this and so far from that. We'll have to build a wall out there if you have one there. So I thought, all right, I'll try somebody else. So I get in touch with another firm, and I say, I want a new oil tank. Well, well, we'll come and have a look. So they come and have a look. Where do you want it? Just there? Yes. All right, we'll do all the work. We'll fit it all up for you, fine. No trouble. Too many petty regulations. You've got to cut the tree down because the Congress might fall on the children's head. There's a lovely avenue between Wimborne and Blandford. Beech trees, and it's been there, oh, I don't know how many hundred years. A beautiful avenue. They're talking about cutting off the branches in case they fall on a car. It's ridiculous. Silly regulations. I think somebody sits over there in Brussels and thinks, what can we cane them with now, especially those English people? Because England's not on the map anymore, is it? Did you know? England is not on the map. You get a map of Europe, and you'll find France and Germany, Spain, Italy, Portugal, Southwest region, Southeast region, and Gibraltar is part of the Southwest region, which I'm in. But there's no England on the map. There's Scotland, yes, and Wales, but no England. England gone. No, that's what makes me cross. Yeah, it does.